Branch NMLS number 33041. Rick Rittman's NMLS number 664589. Equal housing lender. Some restrictions apply.
Welcome to Indy's Real Estate Gurus, brought to you by Advisors Mortgage Group and Fix It Mortgage. Our branch NMLS is 33041. Now, here's your host, the hard-working mortgage guy, Rick Rickma.
Thank you for joining me today. I truly appreciate it. And I hope you've probably heard by now that interest rates are at record lows. But what does that mean to a mortgage payment? I found this chart and I thought it was extremely interesting on what these record low rates mean. Now, I'm just going to go based on this chart, and this is on a $300,000 loan by decade. So in 1970s, the average interest rate in the 1970s was 8.86%. And that on a $300,000 loan, principal and interest payment, 30-year fixed, that would give you a payment of $2,384. So a $300,000 home in 1970, the principal and interest payment on the average interest rate of 8.86% would be $2,384. In 1980, interest rates kicked up. They were 12.7%. Now, I know you'll hear some people talk about the rates in the 20s. Well, this is an average rate. This isn't the high rate. There were rates in the 20s and in the late 70s, maybe even early 80s. But in the 80s, the average interest rate was 12.7%. And on 12.7% on a $300,000 loan, that would give you a payment of $3,248. That's nine than the decade of 1970. So that is a huge number. Now let's move on to the 1990s. 1990s, the average interest rate was 8.12%. So on a $300,000 loan at the average interest rate of 8.12%, you would have a payment of $2,267. So back down to where they were in the 70s, but still $2,267. And I can tell you, I can remember back in the 90s, in the early 90s, well, May of 90, I went into new home sales for a large local builder. And when I got into the business, the rates were over 10. They were 11, 11.5, 12%. And I can remember when they got under 10%, and we thought we hit the jackpot. Everybody was so excited. They never thought they'd see rates again under 10%. And that was after the 1980s. Never thought they would see it. Today, nobody thinks we'll ever see 10% again, but we probably will. But nobody thinks that, it's not in our minds. Right now, we're so low. Now, again, 1990, 8.12% average interest rate. Years in the 2000s, the average interest rate was 6.29%. Again, it was a very low rate compared to what we had seen in the last three decades, 6.29%. The mortgage payment on a $300,000 home at that average interest rate of 6.29 would be $1,855. Now that's about $600, $500 less than it was in the 70s and about $1,400 less than it was in the 80s. So pretty significant drop. In the 2010s, so the last decade we just came through, the average interest rate was 4.09%. That's the average interest rate in the decade of 2010s, and that would give you a payment of $1,448. So that $1,448 is about $900 less than the 70s, about $1,700 less than the 80s, $800 less than the 90s, about $400 less than the 2000s. So you're seeing a very, very low rate. Today, the average interest rate today is near 3%. And that would give you on a $300,000 loan at the average interest rate today would be $1,270. $1,270. Now compare that. That's to the 2010s. It's not a huge savings, but still $150 a month saving, $180 a month savings. But when you look back to the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, we're talking about a savings of several thousand, $2,000. To the 1980s and over $1,000 to the 1970s and the 1990s. So these rates are ridiculously low, and I just really want to help people understand how low they actually are and how it can actually help you. If you can think about it, you can get a based on this, on a $300,000 home that would have been a principal and interest payment in the 80s of $3,248, today it would be $1,270. That is just a tremendous amount of difference. So you can afford a tremendous amount more home. And of course, we all know incomes have gone up because inflation, so our income is much better. So there is a lot of availability to be able to buy a home now with these low rates, and you can just a lot of times buy maybe a little more home than you were hoping, maybe not, depends on what your situation is. But again, we'd want to talk about that. Just, you know, look me up online, hardworkingmortgageguy.com. All my contact information's there. You know, contact me, give me a call, send me an email, text me, contact me through my contact page on the website, and we can talk about how it would look for you. And this could be a purchase or a refinance. Just know that these rates are incredibly low right now and makes a great opportunity to either shorten your term, get cash out and do some home improvements, just straight refinance, lower your payment, just whatever you want to accomplish. We can talk about it and try to work out exactly what you want to accomplish. Now, can you use these low rates to invest in real estate? And that's really what I wanted to talk about today, is investing in real estate. And you absolutely can use these low rates to invest in real estate. Obviously, when you own real estate, depends on what you're looking to do. If you're looking to just buy a home, fix it up, sell it, or whether you're looking to buy a home and put renters in there and rent it out. Maybe you're looking at buying a home, living in double, living in one side, renting out the others. All these are great ways to invest in real estate. And most people believe and understand that real estate is a great investment. It's a great way to build wealth. You have to live somewhere anyway. You might as well, you know, finance it, own it, and build the equity in it. So how do you do this? How do you go about qualifying and buying a rental property? Is it any different than buying a primary residence? And in a way, it is a little different. It's not significantly different. It's a little different in the way we qualify, and some of the rules are a little bit different. And some of these rules are changing because some of these rental properties with COVID, they didn't have to pay rent, and so that's changed some of what's happened. So we do have to, those things matter. But it is certainly the basics are still the same. So we're going to talk about those. Any specifics we'd want to talk, you'd want to contact me and we could talk about it and talk about your specific situation. So the very first thing you want to do before you go out and look at real estate as an investment, before you go, do any of those things, you want to get pre-qualified. You have to make sure that you understand the qualification, what you qualify for on a lender's point of view, so that when you go out, you're looking at the right type of property, the right price range, and it will help you make the proper decision. So you want to make sure you get pre-qualified. What's the best way to do that? The best way to do that is contact me, and we will walk you through that. There's a lot of things that we look at. One of the things that we can look at today is we can still look at the rent that's being paid. As long as, if it's a rental property today, let's say you're buying a rental property that's a rental property today. If the renters have been paying their rent, we can show that the seller has been collecting the rent every month and they're paying their rent. We can use some of that income for qualifying. So it is something that you don't, we're going to add some income to your income to help you qualify. And it does help a tremendous amount. But again, we want to walk through that with each individual and talk about it. Let's say it's a property that doesn't have a renter in it now. Well, they're still going to look at that property and they're going to come up with what they think the rent's going to be. And we're still going to be able to use some of that income as income to qualify. And why is that important? What it means is it may increase, what price range you can buy, how many properties you can buy. It can change a variety of things. You need to know that because you need to be able to make those plans and figure out what it is that you want to do, how you're going to do that. The next piece of it is down payment. And the down payment is an important piece because on a normal non-owner occupied property, rental property, the best option is 25% down. So if you're looking at a $100,000 home, you're going to need $25,000 down. So down payment, if you don't have any source of coming up with a down payment, that's going to be a problem with rental property. Rental prop It's going to be a problem with all properties, but especially with rental properties because they require so much more down. On a standard finance purchase of a home or even a refinance, we can get on a conventional, we can do 3 or 5% down, as little as 3 or 5% down many times. And on an FHA, it's 3.5% down. A VA doesn't have to have anything down. Rural housing, zero down. So there are, when you're doing a primary, it's a little different. When you're doing a rental property, you can get by with 20%, but it's really going to kick the rates up. 25% is really what you need to finance, to be able to put down, to be able to finance a home as a non-owner occupied. And again, we're talking both a home that you're buying to be have a rental, but then there's also a lot of people out there buying homes that they're just taking and they're improving those houses, and then they're going to sell those houses. And so we're going to talk a little bit more about that after the break.
You're listening to Indy's Real Estate Gurus, brought to you by Advisors Mortgage Group and Fix It Mortgage. Now back to your host, the hard-working mortgage guy, Rick Rickma.
So let's say on the rental property, what you're actually looking for is you want to get into, a lot of people out there, they call it flipping. You want to buy a house, fix it up, and then sell it. And but you may or may not have the funds to fix it up. Now, remember, if you're buying a house to fix it up and you want to just go with a standard mortgage, you're still going to have to put the 20 to 25% down based on the purchase price. Then you're going to have to spend your money to fix it up, and then you can sell it and get your money back and hopefully make a profit. The other option is we can do on a rental property, we can do a renovation loan. So let's say you find a rental property that you want to buy, and you want to buy it, fix it, and sell it. We can finance that in a renovation loan. And what that means is here's kind of how it works, just the basic numbers. So let's say you have a $150,000 property that you want to buy, and it needs $50,000 worth of work to make it to what you want before you then turn it and sell it. And you think, okay, I'm going to be able to sell this for $250,000. So you take that $200,000 home, and it's a $150,000 home, put the $50,000 in it. Now you have a value of $200,000. If the appraisal with the work that's going to be completed comes in at $200,000, we need 20% or 25% down. So on that, you're going to need what, $50,000? Yeah, $50,000. And with $50,000 down, so now you finance $150,000 on a renovation loan. And that allows you now to buy the house. Now you have the money to fix it up. Now you can't do any of the work yourself. It has to be done through contractors, and there's a whole program behind it. So we have the contractors do all the work. They fix it all up. And once it's all done, and you decide what's going to be done, some of it, it has to be to a certain standard. There's certain things that when it's inspected, they say you got to do these items. And then, you might say, well, yes, in addition to, I want to redo the kitchen. I want to redo the baths. I want to do new flooring. And then we put all that in. Say it came up to $50,000. You get the loan. You do the work. And then you can turn around and sell the house as an improved home. A lot of people are doing that, so that is definitely another option. You can also do the same thing and use it as a rental, or you can do it and sell it. That is an option you can do no matter what. Either way, we can help you work through that. Again, the best thing to do is contact me. Go to hardworkingmortgageguy.com. That's hardworkingmortgageguy.com. Give me a, call me from, it has my phone numbers. It has all my contact information. Give me a call, text me, send me an email, put your information in the contact information, and then I will get back with you as quick as I can.
Now it's time for Questions with the Gurus.
Today's question comes from Scott and April S., and they refinanced in January, and they wanted to know if it makes sense to look into refinancing again. And they refinanced in January, and you'd think, wow, why would somebody who refinanced in January want to look at refinancing again? This is what, August. So why? Well, we're at record low rates. And with the record low rates, it can possibly make sense to refinance. I don't actually remember what rates were in January, but I believe they were in the upper threes. I won't swear to that. And now we're at record low. So we can you know, depending on the situation, we can lower the rates significantly and save quite a bit of money for Scott and April. We went through it, and it did make sense for them to refinance because the rates were low enough. But it's a trade-off. What we want to look at is rate, cost, you know, how much time you're going to be in the home, those type of things. It's all the things I talked to Scott and April about so we could figure out, okay, so what is going to be the best option for them? Does this make sense? You know, let's say you had refinanced in January. Now you're thinking, you know what, we're going to sell next year. Then we'd have to look at it and see if it makes sense. Are you going to recoup any of the costs that are involved? And are you going to make any money by doing that? If you're going to sell that quickly, maybe it's not going to make any sense. But we want to run those numbers. We want to understand it. We want to see it. We want to make sure that it's going to be in your best interest to do that. So rate matters. The cost of the refinance matters. You know, how much does it cost? What are the closing costs? And how much is that going to cost to do this? And that's all trade-offs. How long does it take to get the money back? What is this make sense based on, last piece, time and home? If you're going to be in the home, you know, over time, we're going to run this analysis. We're going to look at the analysis, and we're going to figure out, you know, based on your situation and what you're expecting and what you're thinking, on whether it makes sense to refinance. But for many, many people, I say 6 months, it really is about 6 months. If you haven't refinanced in 6 months, it's definitely worth looking at. It certainly was for Scott and April. They saved quite a bit of money by refinancing, and it very likely will be making sense to you. Again, just go to hardworkingmortgageguy.com. That's hardworkingmortgageguy.com. All my contact information is there. Call me, email me, text me. You can put your contact information in my contact me, you know, information, and I will get back with you as quick as I can. But let's get back to financing investment properties. So we talked a little bit about counting the rental income, but it is a big piece of it. So if you're not buying to flip, where we have no rental income, we can't count anything. If you're buying a house and maybe you don't think you really have the income, you might have the income based on what we would be able to count on rental income, because we do, again, count that income to make sure that you can buy, you know, the house. And it really helps a lot on how much house you can buy. So let's say, as an example, let's say your mortgage payment on the property with these low rates is, let's say it's $700 a month with taxes and insurance. Let's say it's $1,000, taxes, insurance, everything, you're $1,000 a month. And let's say you're bringing in on rental, you're bringing in $1,500 a month on rental income. Well, we're going to count 75% of that. So we're going to count the income at $1,200. And your expenses are only $1,000. So that's going to wipe out, basically, it's going to take the payment out. We're not going to count that payment, not exactly, but we aren't going to count that payment against you, basically. That's not the exact way it works, but basically that's what's going to happen. Which means as long as you qualify on your income, you can do this. And so it's definitely worth looking at. If you want to buy rental property, we should look at it, run the numbers, do the pre-qualification, make sure that what you can buy, what price range you can buy. Because it is a great way, as we've talked in the past, it's a great way to build a nest egg. We talked about the amount that homes are increasing in our area. We talked about that a show or two ago, but I want to talk about that again. As while we're talking about this, I think it makes sense. Let's just take Marion County, which there's a lot of rental properties in Marion County. You take Marion County with an average median home price of $165,000, and in the next 5 years, the anticipated appreciation is 22%. So if you bought a median price, $165,000 home, and it appreciates at that 22%, which is what it's expected to do over the next 5 years, the value of the house has gone up $36,000. It's gone from $165,000 to $201,000. You've also paid it down. Your renters have paid you the income to pay it down. So now you've built equity by paying the loan down, and your house is appreciated. And that's why this makes a lot of sense. You keep it for, 10 years, 20 years. It just keeps appreciating. At least that's the anticipation. You know, we're just looking out 5 years, but it is certainly a great way to look at it. If you're a first-time home buyer, another good option for a non-owner for a rental property would be finding a double or a triplex or maybe even a fourplex, a nice property you would be happy to live in. You can buy it, move into it. We can use the rental income to help you qualify. You know, you can live there a while. Maybe you decide, you know what, now I'm going to make it a full rental. I want to buy another rental property or another double and move in and do the same thing. Or, you know, however you decide you want to move up, because it's very important when you buy that first home, your first home, it's you wanted something that you like. You wanted something that you're happy with. But for most people, that first home is a stepping stone. It's the home that you're buying so that you can build the equity to move up to the next home. It's not usually the first home is not normally your dream home. And so buying a double or you know, a quad or a fourplex or something like that can make a lot of sense if you can find one in the area that you like that fits your needs. It can be a great option. And it can really help you build equity and build wealth quickly, as a lot of rental properties can. You have to make sure you're obviously making the right decision. You're finding properties in the right area. Your rents are going to cover your payments. All of those things are extremely important. And I think another piece of this that does matter also is that you want to make sure that you're when you're doing this, that you don't buy too quickly. And I don't mean the first property. I mean multiple properties. The people that I've seen have the most trouble are people who bought too many properties at one time. They didn't have any experience in owning real estate. So they decided, you know, this is the way. They got excited and they went out and bought 10 pieces of property or 5 pieces of property. And now they have to manage those properties and they have to run those properties and they have to figure all the things out. You're much better off. It's not as fast, and I'm as impatient as anybody. But it's better if you take your time, buy one property, figure it out, work on it, figure out whether you like doing it or not, because it may be something you don't even like doing. But if you do like doing it, then you figure that out, you get that one established, you feel comfortable, and then you can move on to the next property. So it is extremely important that you look at that. Now, also, we talked about, you know, counting the rental income, but I also want to talk about the property taxes and other escrows. On a non-owner occupied or rental property, we are going to escrow for property taxes and homeowners insurance. And if the home is a current rental property, the taxes are going to be higher than what they would be on a primary residence because of the tax rate that you're charged or the tax benefits you get by being the home being your primary residence. So the big piece that happens to some people, it can be a shock to their system, is when they buy a property, it's not a rental property, but they make it into a rental property. So they buy a property, they make it into a rental property. They don't live there, so they don't get the homestead exemption. The property taxes are at 1%, let's say, just an estimate, 1% of the value. So let's say the home is a $120,000 home. The property taxes are 1%. That's $1,200. That's $100 a month that is in your mortgage payment because to cover the taxes so they can be paid when they come due. Now, down the road, the home, once it becomes assessed while you owned it and you've made it a rental property, it no longer has the homestead exemption. When you lose the homestead exemption, it jumps to 2%. So instead of $1,200, it goes to $2,400. So it goes from $100 a month to $200 a month. That can be a shock to the system. And that can be it really hurt your what you're making and the income that you're making off the rental property. So you got to be aware of that, and that's what happens. You got to understand that that's something that can happen. So you just be aware that is the case, and understand that your mortgage payment's going to go up if that is the case. Now, again, if you buy a property that's already a non-owner occupied property or rental property, it's not going to have the homestead exemption, so it's already going to have the higher taxes. Let's say you're looking at a double, and it's you're going to live there. It's rented currently. Doesn't get a homestead exemption. But when you move in there, you can get the homestead exemption. You'd file that, and then you should get that would lower your taxes, and it would actually save on your property taxes. But I will say most people are much more surprised when their taxes go up by $100 or $200 or $300 a month than when they go down a little bit. So that is something to absolutely to consider, and you really have to think about. We talked a little bit about how many properties can you buy, and my suggestion, as I said, is buy one. If you haven't done this before, buy one. Don't buy multiple properties. Go find a property. Learn how this works. Learn how it what it does, how you're going to maneuver it, whether it fits in your style and what you want to do. And then once you've figured it out, so you figure out how you collect rent, how you take care of the property, how you make your payments, everything, you know, you understand the entire process, then you can might want to look at buying multiple properties. Now, I don't own rental properties today. I have owned rental properties in the past. I owned about 6 units at one time, and I can tell you I did it too quickly. And I bought some properties to flip. I bought some properties to rent, and it was a little bit different time. But because of that, because of me doing it too quickly, it was a lot harder. It worked out okay. It wasn't something that didn't work out okay. It did, but it was just much, much harder on me than it needed to be. And in retrospect, and in with working with a lot of people who own rental property, I've put on seminars on rental properties, on how to finance them. I've had people who own a bunch of rental properties be part of those seminars to teach people, you know, the rest of it, like how to rent it and how to collect rent and how to maintain it and what you do. And I can tell you there's a lot more to it than what most people think. And when you get excited, you want to just move forward. You really are better off doing it slowly. Don't buy a bunch of rental properties all at one time. You know, start with one, figure it out, and then move on. The other part of that is because you have to put 20 to 25% down. Most people can't just start out and go right into, you know, financing, you know, 10 rental properties. Some people can, most can't. And again, that goes for whether you're buying it to rent or whether you're buying it to flip. If you're looking to flip, again, I would start with one. I talked to a guy who flips quite a few properties, and he says he wins on about 2 out of 3. But he loses on 1 out of 3. But he maybe not loses. He breaks even. Says you just never know. You end up, you know, you anytime you're doing a renovation, you can end up with additional items that need to be done. You tear a bath out, you find out there's whole other issues behind it. You know, you tear the kitchen out, you find out there's other issues. There's just so many things that can come up that you have to, as you're renovating, it can eat into your profits. So again, I think it may be even more important. I don't know. They're both extremely important that you start out with multiple or with one property and don't move into multiple properties until you've experienced it. And if flipping, I would probably suggest that you do it a couple, 3 times before you jump in and try to do more than one. Most of the guys I know who are doing the flipping, they're doing one at a time. Some of them are doing 2 or 3. But most of them aren't. And then some are doing a lot more than that, but they've done it for a long time. They understand it. They know how to go in. They know what they have to do. They, you know, the other part is you have to know what to do to a house like that, because it's important that you do that. I had a friend who owned a whole bunch of apartment buildings. I mean, they owned, you know, over 1,000 units. And when he got started, he told me, you know, the first building they bought a 5-unit building. And he said they went in and they fixed it up, and they fixed it up like they would want to, that they would want. If they were going to live there, that's how they fixed it up. And he said it was the biggest mistake he made. He lost a bunch of money doing that, but he learned. He said it was worth the experience to learn. He says you don't do that. He said if you fix it up to rent, and it's different than fixing it up to live in. And so you want consistency, you want it ease of maintenance, you want it easy to repaint when somebody moves out. And he talked about all of those things that matter when you're owning a property and you're renting a property. And so you just want to be very careful. You want to make sure that, in my opinion, you do it slowly, make sure that you're doing it so that you can learn and grow. You know, if you're looking at renovation, we should talk about that. Best way to do that is just go onto my website. It's hardworkingmortgageguy.com. It's hardworkingmortgageguy.com. give me a call, send me an email. You can fill out the contact me information. Please join us next week as I discuss the 10-step process of buying a home.